Hello everyone, welcome back to another session of Microsoft Learn Live. Microsoft Learn Live is a series of guided courses designed to increase your knowledge of Azure and to do it in a way where hopefully you can take your knowledge that you learn, apply it to your own projects. So we're your hosts for the session. It's our fifth and final session for this series, Glenn. Speaking of Glenn, this is Glenn over here. Glenn, how are you doing? I think you're muted.
My apologies. It's so live and interactive that I'm too excited. It's the final one. And yeah, I'm doing well, Kim. Yourself?
I'm good. Yeah. So super excited. So Glenn, we've got a few people on the line. We've got 60 odd people. So welcome everyone. So it is live, as Glenn just demonstrated. So welcome. Glenn, why don't you go ahead, introduce yourself, and I'll bring up some stats for you.
Cool. Hi everyone, my name is Glenn Stevens. I'm a senior content developer here at Microsoft as part of the Learn Live team. I've been a developer for a long time. I like to make things, that tends to be my mantra. I like to make apps, websites, build things. I like building things, keeps me busy, entertains the mind as well. I love doing it. That's kind of me in a nutshell. Kim, do you want to introduce yourself?
Of course. So yeah, my name is Kim Philpotts. I'm also a senior content developer at Microsoft, working with Glenn and a lot of other people as well at the Learn team to bring you these Learn Live series. So instructional designers and developers and you know, all manner of people working together. Over here, there's some contact details for me. So feel free to reach out to me on Twitter. Have a look at my GitHub repo for some code samples in there. As you might have guessed from our accents, we're based in Australia. So we're, Glenn, you're up in Brisbane, I'm down in Melbourne. Now, as well as us, we also have a couple of moderators on the line as well. So we've got our good friend Rob Gibbons and Matt Calder as well. So why don't you say hi in the chat window? And for all of those out there, you know, this is a live session, so feel free to ask any questions you have. Don't feel shy. Just pop them in the chat window. We're going to answer them as best we can, aren't we, Glenn?
We are. We're going to try and do our best. And what we can't do, Rob and Matt will handle the overflow to make sure we get answers. And those answers might be direct, here it is, or it might be, here's some things you can research for yourself to apply to your own solution. We'll do a good a job as we can.
Yeah, fantastic. And, you know, feel free to just say hi in the chat window as well. So, you know, sort of tell us where you are. So we can see a few in there as well. Akila, welcome back, Akila.
Nice. And Anonymous. Anonymous always has many things to say. It's good.
Absolutely. So yeah, don't feel shy. Okay. So before we get into today's session, because some people will have gone through the previous session, some people will be pretty new to this, but let's recap the scenario that we're working on, Glenn, and just to understand what we're going to cover off in today's session. Okay. So in our scenario, what we're doing is we have a fictitious company called Van Arsdale. Van Arsdale is in the real estate business. They're running a pretty nice website that they're selling the real estate property on. Now, at the very beginning of the whole journey, where we started off with is Van Arsdale. They've got their website, which is built in ASP.NET Core. They have a SQL Server database. All of this stuff was on premises. They just did everything manually as well. So all just manual build and deploys. So probably like a lot of people, I suppose, who are looking at moving to the cloud. So what we did is, you know, with Van Arsdale, they had these concerns around maintenance, cost and scaling. You know, as things changed, they wanted to make sure that they were scaling up. And so they decided themselves it was time to move to the cloud. And so over the sessions, we've gone through that process. So in our first session, what we did is we went through moving the web application into an app service in Azure. So that was our very first step. And from there, where did we go, Glenn?
Well, the next step was we migrated our database from an on-premises SQL Server installation into a cloud-based Azure SQL Server installation. Not only did we move the database, but also the data within it too, using the data migration assistant, which is a really lovely tool. And the nice thing at that particular stage is that everything was in the cloud and we didn't have to make any code changes. It was really nice.
Yeah, so it was really nice. So what we did at that point is we actually went and had a look, and this was in our series three, and I'm sure Matt and Rob will post out some links to the recordings as well. But we actually went and helped the developers out, right? Because both Glenn and I are developers, and so we know that sometimes things work on particular people's machines and not on others. So we actually went through this process of creating an automated deployment. And so we use something called the Azure App Deployment Center to do that. It uses a system called Kudu, which means that how we set it up was when we commit some changes to GitHub, those changes would automatically get deployed up into our app service. And what that means is it just means faster deployments and safer deployments as well.
Nice. You know, Kim, after that, we modified our solution to then add blob storage to take advantage of having a centralized cloud storage to store all the images for Van Arsdale. And that was really nice. And it allowed us to actually add the potential for scaling out, which we'll look at today.
Yeah, and so that's, you know, pretty much where we started, you know, improving the solution to take advantage of things that are in Azure as well. And we're actually going to do that again today, because what we're going to have a look at is monitoring and scaling. So there's a saying, Glenn, that even the best laid plans of mice and men go awry. And yeah. Everyone in IT knows that, right?
I think everyone in the world knows that right now, but yeah. Well,
yeah, I think that's true to say. And the idea there with that saying is, you know, no matter how carefully you plan, something is probably still going to go wrong. You know, you're going to find issues, you're going to find bugs. And that's why it's important to be able to monitor your applications in production as well. And, you know, even if you're a super awesome developer and super awesome IT, you know, sort of like your caliber, I suppose, Glenn, you know, you don't have any issues with your application, you're still going to want to be able to monitor your application and scale it when you have additional load. And, you know, I come from a development background, as I mentioned, and I think it's true to say that a lot of developers, particularly, you know, are a little bit scared of this whole idea of scaling your application. It seems really scary and challenging for developers, especially because it sounds like there's a lot of work involved in it. But, you know, one of the big advantages of being in the cloud is elasticity, which is to say, you know, we can scale up and down without having to actually go and physically provision machines. And, you know, so sometimes that might mean, you know, having a heavy load of users, which is a good problem to have, right? It's better than having no users, of course. So you want to be able to scale out your applications. Now, in today's session, we're kind of going to cover three objectives in here. We're going to start off with monitoring your application against metrics, something called metrics. We'll talk about what they are. We're going to talk about configuring alerts, which you can use when your application hits certain thresholds, how you get notified effectively of those things, and what we can do, you know, so setting up scaling rules for our applications as well. So that's sort of what we're going to cover off, Glenn.
That's cool. And also just to add again, remember this is a live interactive session. So if you have questions, feel free to ask away in the chat window. There's a few other people that have joined in as well, like Deepak and David and Ram. So some questions coming through already. So Ram had a question, is your scenario, does it work for lift and shift? No, ours is migrating an ASP.NET project to platform as a service. So it's not really the lift and shift strategy, but there's some other resources. Hopefully our moderators can find for you and paste in under your question as well.
Yeah. Absolutely. A few people saying hi and seeing a few locations as well. Which cool. Is all right, so Glenn, we should post this question out to people, shouldn't we, really? Who at the moment is currently monitoring your applications? You know, whether that's in a physical, your own data center on premises, whether it's in the cloud, whatever cloud service you might provide. Are people monitoring their applications, and what are they monitoring, and why are they monitoring, I suppose?
I'd also like to know the reverse. If you're not monitoring, why is the reason?
That's a good question.
Maybe you just hadn't thought of it, or maybe there's some other aspects to it, but I'd be curious to know.
Yeah, absolutely. What about you, Glenn? Have you got any experience with monitoring applications?
Yeah, I monitor my applications. Well, I use a lot of the techniques that are here as well, but I also take a lot of logs and things like that and monitor behavior of the applications to provide more focus to where people are using the application to. So I might look at the logs and see which see what data is used, see how my servers are performing as well, and just to manage the resources. But yeah, I monitor as much as I can, so as not to degrade any user experience.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's pretty much true to say, right? Just about any application that's in production is probably, you probably want to be monitoring those.
Yeah. So you can see a few comments there, things like Gaurav's got App Insights, Anonymous's VS App Center. Okay.
Yep, for monitoring the the internal, the diagnostics. So
yeah,
something similar to App Insights, I suppose.
Cool.
What else have we got? Ram says we have a similar scenario where we want to do lift and shift with Windows Server 2012 with .NET applications and SQL Server. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So, well, I think that path is very similar to what we're doing. If you're doing lift and shift, that's really often where you're running virtual machines and then moving them into the cloud. But if you're migrating them to platform as a service, if you haven't seen the first four of the episodes, Ram, I'd encourage you to watch the recordings, and you probably find a lot of things that are applicable to what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So what else can I see here? Troy says traditional data center using SEQ and Serilog. Okay, so for application diagnostics.
Yeah.
Ken's got an interesting one, raw performance monitor. So I suppose that's a performance monitor that's built into Windows to actually have a look at the metrics that are coming out against servers and things like that.
Yeah.
So Ram says, can you please let us know if we can export real-time monitor information to integrate with on-premises monitoring tools? Yeah, look, as we'll go through in today's session, the monitoring that's in Azure is amazing. It's actually sort of been, you know, revamped, I suppose, you know, over the last year particularly. So there's lots of really great stuff in there, including ways of exporting. You know, you can go from, we'll talk about this a little bit later, but you can like export as cell files, which is probably not what you're after here. But there's a lot of sort of ways that you can export that as well. So maybe Rob or Matt can find you some links on that as well. All right. Fantastic.
That's a good spread of tools that people are using as well. So kind of an interesting concept. Where to now, Kim?
Well, look, why don't we jump in and get started? Let's talk about some prerequisites first, I suppose. So first of all, you know, what do we need to know to get going with this class? Well, really, in today's class, we're going to spend most of our time in the portal, but our solution itself is Visual Studio 2019. It's ASP.NET Core 2.2. But you know, if you've got access to an Azure subscription, that would be great if you want to sort of follow along. And I should mention as well, before I do that, I'll just say what tools we're using. We're using the Azure portal today, pretty much. We're not going to delve into code because we're going to talk about monitoring our services more so than our actual code, which, you know, I can see from a few people saying using App Insights, for example, using the Visual Studio App Center as well. That's sort of more monitoring from an application level. We're going to talk more about the services themselves, but we're going to have a look in the portal because it's not an Azure course without the portal, is it, Glenn?
Hasn't been so far.
And we've also got some code as well. So this code here, aka.ms/vanarsdal repo, and I should bring this down into our screen. I think that should appear down below. There we go. If you go to that, that's where you'll find some great links on the material and also how to set this up as well. If you're interested in setting up and going through later on. So Vanarsdal repo is where you want to go.
Cool. All right. I do want to add, Kim, that if you've been following along with the previous four sessions, you might be using the sandbox, which gives you a free tier of the app service plan. In this particular course, we're looking at scalability, and some of the scalability aspects won't work on the free tier. You actually need to be on the S1 app service plan because the free tiers don't support auto scaling. So if you've been following along for that, you might want to use your subscription if you want to keep on following along, or just watch and take in some of the learnings that we've got to show you today.
Yeah, no, that's good advice. But you know, the great thing is, it's super easy to swap between those different tiers. We'll show you how to do that in a moment. All right, great. Well, let's get started, Ben. Let's talk about our first objective for today. What we want to do is we want to have a look at basically monitoring our application against some metrics. And I suppose we should define what metrics are. The technical definition, I suppose, is they're values that describe some sort of measurable aspect of your system at a particular point in time, right? Which sounds a bit archaic, but just think of it like, you know, what's your current CPU load or what's the disk queue length, things like that. So it's some information about the current state of the system. And very first thing we want to talk about is kind of the importance, you know, of monitoring and particularly as well, what metrics you might be sort of concerned with. And then what we'll do is we'll have a look at basically where we can view metrics in the portal, because one of the nice things is that it, you know, it actually collects that information for you as well. Okay, so Glenn, why do we want to get metrics about our system?
Well, at the moment, we've actually brought our application into the cloud. We're running it on cloud infrastructure. We're running this platform as a service as well. In our on-premises environment, we're used to having the machines there and the data, and we could update and monitor what we're doing. But in a cloud situation, we want to look at what we can do. As with any system, there's going to be things that we want to monitor regardless, just in order to make sure our application is running without issues. And there's really three main types of metrics that we want to monitor. And the first one is performance. Mm-hmm. So is our application under heavy load? Is it slowing to a crawl? And if the answer is yes to either of those, that could be caused by high CPU load, or maybe you've got a database configured at too low a compute tier. What's the next aspect, Tim?
Yeah, well, like I suppose the one that's probably most people would think of when they think about metrics is errors, right? So nobody likes errors. Glenn, you don't like errors. I'm pretty sure everyone on the call doesn't like errors. They don't like receiving them. They don't like fixing them either. But you know, customers really don't like errors. You know, so we've all visited websites that are down, and you know, sometimes they stay down for a while, and you're actually thinking to yourself, well, I wonder if they even know whether their website's down or not. So you don't want to be that person, or you don't want to be that company, right? So you don't want it to remain unnoticed for a long period of time. So one of the nice things about Azure monitoring is we can avoid that by having alerts sort of send out to us when we have problems with the websites, and then hopefully you can jump in there and tackle those before the users even see them.
Cool. So the next one from memory, Kim, is cost, right?
Yeah.
So cost is interesting. There was, in the first two sessions that we had, there was actually a lot of questions about cost with the app service and database. So I think things like that are important to people because they have to pay for the resources that they use. So the more performance we reserve when we create things like an app service plan or a database, the more we have to pay. So monitoring can tell us when we're underutilizing resources, and we might actually scale that down and save a little bit of money in the process.
Yeah. And that's really cool, right? That, you know, like part of cost is not only, you know, when you incur additional costs, it's when, you know, when it's quiet times. You want to know that it's quiet. You want to be able to scale it down, save some dime.
You might have some peak times. You might be running some event that happens on a weekend. So on the weekend, you need more scalability. During the week, not so much.
Yeah.
And manage it there. Cool.
Fantastic. All right. Just having a quick look at the chat windows. See if there's anything in there. Just a couple of questions about App Insights there as well. Okay, but look, for the moment, Glenn, why don't we go in and have a look at the portal and just have a bit of a look at what we can actually go and monitor here. Okay, so I'm going to come over to the portal, and I might make this big mode, I think, Glenn, so everyone can see. All right, wonderful. Okay, so here we are in the portal. So I've got the resources that we have deployed. So pretty much what's in the repo. So we've got our application. Here's our application. It's running, beautiful. Okay, over in the portal, we've got each of our services here. So let's have a look at the app service. So remembering that you know, an app service is what's actually sort of delivering our web pages inside of here. Okay, so the very first thing that you'll notice actually is when you go into the portal and you have a look at an object and or a resource, and we're looking at an overview here, and we sort of scroll down, what we can see is that there's actually some stats in here as well, right? Some metrics are being collected. So you can see that the data in and data out, we're getting data in and data out. We can see requests over time, our average response time for things as well. So all of this stuff is actually automatically collected for you, which is really, really awesome. You know, there's things like a very important message, like HTTP 500 errors, which is going to indicate that, yeah, basically there's a server error. So obviously if we're getting any of those, and fortunately we're not, you probably want to go and investigate that. But you know, you can see data in, data out for something like an app service, very important, the number of requests we're getting over time, the average response time as well. So, you know, that's all really, really good information that's available from there. And it's just being collected for us, which is lovely. But you know, we can actually sort of drill into this and change it as well. So if I was to say, for example, click on requests and come into here, I can actually see that over time. And I can adjust these as well. So I can sort of change my time period. So I can say, okay, well, let's look over the last 4 hours, for example, what's been happening. And we can see that information, or, you know, we can drill into, you know, say the last 30 minutes, which is probably where we've been chatting. There hasn't been a lot going on in here. But what we can also do is we can sort of customize these things as well in terms of what sort of charts that we want to see in here. We can do things like we can have a look at the actual metrics themselves. We can add additional metrics into here. And because we're looking at an app service here, we can see that there's the metrics related to an app service, right? So things you might expect, I suppose, like, you know, CPU time, data in, data out. There's a few sort of developer ones like garbage collections inside of here. And, you know, how many of various messages we're getting through as well. So lots of stuff that's collected inside of there. So you can do that. What else can we do? We can share this out. Somebody mentioned sharing this information. We can share that out. We can download it to Excel. We can copy a link and give a link to this. We can also do something really cool as well. Like we can go ahead and we can pin this to a dashboard, right? So we've pinned this to a dashboard. What's cool about that is if I go and view this dashboard, right? I can do things like I can, you know, basically customize this and bring this down. I can go and grab these and I can position these around. So if you played around with the portal, you've probably seen some of this stuff, but we can customize this and basically set it up however you like, and then create yourself a dashboard that shows you the stuff that you want. You know, and we can finish customize it, we can publish the changes, we can discard it as well. So, you know, let's just say publish those changes. So now I have this VanArsdale dashboard, which is showing us some information here, you know, and I can basically have that up on a big screen. Have you ever done that, Glenn?
I have.
It's set up.
Yeah, it's quite nice, especially if you've got something that's a little bit more complicated than normal too. So just having that one place to go, how is the state of things? It's really nice.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's really cool. Now, I'll just show you, let me just sort of navigate back to my app service here as well. I'll just show you a couple of other things here. So we can, you know, we can drill into any of these. Now, the same sort of charting is actually available on the left-hand side here. If we come down, there's this monitoring section here. So this monitoring section is kind of where you go to for all your monitoring. And what we're looking at effectively at the moment is metrics. Okay, and these are just the predefined metrics that it gives you out of the box. But you can create your own custom reports here as well. Like if you click on metrics, you can basically come in here and you can create your own series of charts. And you can have, you know, combined stats in here as well. So lots of really cool capabilities inside of there. Now, what we're kind of looking at the moment is an app service. Right. What we might want to have a look at is say something like an app service plan. Right. So if you go and have a look at different objects, like so I can see my app service plan here. If I click on that, you'll also find that it has metrics as well, but the metrics it collects are a little bit different. So what sort of metrics have we got here, Glenn?
Well, some of the key metrics for something like an app service you'd be interested in is CPU percentage, like you can see like you can see in the top left. So that's the average CPU that's used across all instances of the plan. So you might actually have multiple apps running. You might have memory percentage, which is the average memory that's used across all instances of the plan. And likewise with data in and data out, which is the average incoming and outgoing bandwidth that's used across all instances of the plan. Now, also, if we go into the metrics details, Kim, there's some other metrics that you might be interested in too that deal with performance. So things like the disk queue length.
And that's a good one.
Cool. Yeah, so that's the average number of both read and write requests that are queued on storage. So when you've got a high disk queue length, that's an indicator that the app might be slowing down because there's too much disk input output going on. There's also another one called HTTP queue length. Got it there. Cool. So that's where the average number of HTTP requests that have had to sit on the queue before being processed. So when you've got a higher or increasing HTTP queue length, that's a symptom of an app service plan that's under some heavy load.
Fantastic. So so look, there's a lot of different things here. And also I should mention that, you know, because I have the scope here, right, is basically set up for app service plan here. It's showing me the metrics that are relevant to that. So each different type of resource will have, you know, different types of metrics that are relevant for it, which kind of makes sense, right? Like if we selected a database, as you can imagine, it would have different metrics as well that it's collecting against it. And so sometimes the challenge is, you know, trying to work out what all of these things are. I'm just going to post a link into the chat window for the documentation that you can sort of find around this. And so this is monitoring apps in Azure App Services. And here it has basically some information about metrics and then all of the different metrics and some additional information about what they all mean. So that's actually pretty cool to go and have a look at that.
That's neat. Now, those metrics are really good to look at and understand, and even when you're in the portal to do that as well. But the thing is, Kim, we don't want to be logged into the portal all the time and just keep constantly checking this data, do we?
It's a good point, Glenn. So there's a couple of questions in the chat window, actually, sort of related to this, I suppose. Krishna said, can the dashboards be set up for real-time metrics? And is this real-time data?
So, normally there's a bit of a lag between it. So there's logging and the process of the logging. You'd have to check on the amount of time before the logs go up, but they're kind of correlated over time. I tend to expect a few minutes. There is some real-time data in there.
Yeah.
What do you think, Kim?
Pretty much they're pretty much spot on. And yes, when you go and have a look at the dashboards, what you'll find with the dashboards is that they will auto refresh as well, right? Mm-hmm. So you can set them up to, you know, auto refresh like every minute or every 20 minutes or what have you. So you can certainly get that real-time information or close to real-time. But, you know, there's also some other ways you can get even closer or even more real-time. Fantastic. Cool. Weedong says, does this session cover Azure SQL monitoring and profiling?
I would love it too, but that's another topic all in itself that would take some time. But yeah, there's some great content you can find over on that. And certainly that's a good skill to have if you can monitor and profile your SQL-based applications for sure.
Yeah, it's a whole series to itself, I think.
It is. And Matt's actually replying to that post as well. Oh, cool. Excellent. Looks like he's already done it.
So monitoring and tuning. Yeah. Wonderful. All right. Now, Glenn, the question you asked me was, we don't want to keep in the portal, right? We don't have to be like sitting here, you know, watching all of these things all of the time. We have a bit of an understanding about what metrics are now. So let's move on to a next objective, which is about getting alerts for when things happen in the system. So we're going to talk about alerts. We're going to talk about what alerts actually mean in the context of Azure. We're going to have a look at how to create them based on metrics that we're interested in. And we're then going to have a look at how to view those alerts that have actually been triggered in your system. Okay, so as a good starting point, I suppose, we should first define what an alert's all about. So an alert really when it comes down to it, allows us to just set up rules which are proactively going to tell us if certain criteria is met. And ultimately, you know, what alerts let us do is just be notified and allow us to address issues before the users of our applications do. And I mentioned this earlier on, but I think if you're going to have an app in production, generally speaking, it's going to be a pretty good idea to set up alerts for it. Okay, so where do we see alerts? I'm actually going to jump back into the portal here for a second. So let me sort of zoom in here. Let's have a look at, say, I'll click on my app service. And on the left-hand side, again, back in that section that we were talking about, we were talking about this monitoring section, okay? And you'll see that there's an alert section here. Okay, so this is where we go and we see alerts. And if I click in here, okay, you can see I've actually set up an alert already. I did this because sometimes it takes alerts a few minutes to actually go and activate effectively, right? But in the alerts here, this is where we're seeing that there's 4 alerts, severity 3 alerts. And we can go and we can review these and we can have a look at those alerts and we can get a little bit more information about them as well. So that's sort of the home place for alerts. But we sort of want to talk about how we go and create one and what alerts actually mean. So Glenn, what do we need to do to set up an alert?
Well, when we create an alert, Kim, there's a few bits of information that we need. In fact, there's 4. We might switch back to the slides. I think we've got a slide there for it.
Yeah, sure. Let me bring that up for you, Glenn.
Awesome. Yeah. So the
beautiful.
The resource is the first part. So the resource is what we're creating the alert for. That can be pretty much anything we want, depending on what we're interested in monitoring about. So for us, it's probably going to be the app service. We might even have the resource as a database or some other capability within Azure as well. It's not just applicable to app services. Yep. So that's the first thing we need. The second thing is the condition. And the condition is a signaling metric or some threshold that needs to be reached in order for some action to be taken. So for example, on our app service plan, we might say, well, if the average CPU reaches above 80%, then mm-hmm. that would be the condition. So is the CPU greater than 80%? Sure. And that would probably indicate that our services are running under some pretty heavy load. Next, we have the action, and that represents what step or steps to take when the condition is triggered. So for example, you might just send an email to the admin to say, you know what, the CPU is under some heavy load. Why don't you take a look and get some clarity on what's going on? And the last detail is the alert details themselves. On the last element. So yep, that's on the screen, cool. So that's things like the name, description, and severity. So is it a critical alert? Is it just an information or warning? Those are the 4 aspects of an alert, Kim.
Yeah, fantastic. And I can see some really good questions in the chat window as well. I think Rob and Matt are answering a lot of those. But I actually just thought I'd just quickly mention, couple of references as well. Talking about alerting that you might want to have a look at. So there's a couple of learn modules, improving incident response with alerting on Azure. And there's also analyzing your Azure infrastructure by using Azure Monitor Logs. So they're really, really good, good learn modules to have a look at. But look, why don't we duck back to our portal, Glenn? Let's set up something so that using that information you've told us, the 4 different things, we'll set up an alert to tell us, I don't know, something we can trigger. So something like a lot of 404s, right? And we'll send an email. How's that sound?
Sounds good.
Sounds good. You're up for it? Beautiful. Yeah. All right. So let's come into our alerts. So I might go ahead and I create a new alert rule. All right. So we've got a new alert rule here and I'm going to click on that. And what I'm being asked for here is effectively those 4 bits of information you talked about, Glenn. So what's the resource? What's the condition? What's the action that we're going to perform? And so they're encapsulated in something called action groups and the alert details. Okay, so let's go through here and talk about these in a bit more detail. First of all, we've got our resource. Now, I was already in the app service when I clicked on this. So it's actually pre-selected that for us, but you can actually come in here and you'll be able to see, you can filter by different types of objects. You can see that there's a zillion types of objects inside of there. You can go and select those and then specify what resource you're actually setting the alert up for. Okay, the next thing is the condition. So this is kind of where you set up, you know, basically what's gonna fire this, right? What's gonna fire this off? So you've got different signal types, metrics, or activity logs. We're not gonna delve into activity logs in today's session, but there is some great material on Learn about it. We're just gonna have a look at the metrics because monitoring is such a big space. Now, we said that we wanted to set up an alert for when we're getting 404s, okay? So down here, I can see all of these different signals. So these are, you know, basically those metrics that are coming through. So I can say, okay, well, let's have a look at 404s. And what it's gonna do is it's gonna show me a little bit about, you know, the history of the 404s. In this case, we've got over the last 6 hours. We can see how many have been happening. And then we can go and set up our alert logic. Okay, so here what we can do is we can say, well, we know we're looking at the 404s, and I can say, look, if I'm getting greater than, say, greater than four, I might even say if there's, you know, if I'm getting an average of more than four, yeah, over a particular period of time, then that's the condition. So you can see it has a condition preview, and we can just set up kind of just the logic here for it. So whenever a 404 is greater than a count of four, over a particular period of time. So we're saying, okay, well, let's have a look at that information based over 5 minutes and let's evaluate it every minute. Okay, so if I do that and I hit okay, you can see it's now said a condition is whenever HB404 is greater than a count of four. And there's a little cost associated with that, Glenn.
Yeah, not too much though. It's like 10 cents really for the month. And in US dollars, that's kind of next to nothing to have a little bit more peace of mind about the service that you're checking.
It's probably the best 10 cents you'll spend all day. Okay, so we now have a condition. So what do we want to do? And so we have these things called action groups that we have in here. So we can add in an action group. And I've actually already got one here, but let's, I'll actually create a new one. Okay, so I'll say create, yeah. And so maybe this is, you know, developer alerts. Alerts or developer actions, right? Maybe. Okay. And so what we can do here is we can say against which subscription, of course, and which resource group. So you can create that in your same resource group that your resources are in. I'll just do that for the moment. The important thing in here, I suppose, is that you can have actions. So this could be something like, you know, email developers, right? And you notice that I can have multiple actions in here. And we specify an action type. And this is where things become a little bit more interesting, I think, because there's the obvious one, like email, SMS, push, and voice, right? So Glenn, what's the push do? The push goes out to the Azure mobile app.
Yeah, right? There's a mobile app for Azure. You can connect to it, and the push will actually send a push notification to your running instance of the Azure app. So you can just get a notification on your phone. Like, you can set it up to be configured that way. So maybe you've got a bunch of 500 internal server errors. When you get that happening, you just want to be notified. You can set up a rule like that, have a push notification to your phone.
Yep, beautiful. So that's a good option. But actually, if you have a look at what's inside of here, there's actually a lot of power inside, because you can basically go and call it Azure Function, right? When this alert triggers, or you could, you know, do a webhook. You could actually, you know, hook out to any sort of third party system that you want. You could run it through a logic app. There's lots and lots of stuff that you can do inside of there. So that's pretty cool. And depending on which one, it will have some different options. For example, I've selected an email and I'll say, okay, well, let's go and send me an email. Right, every time we get a 404, that's not going to be annoying at all. So I can basically set that. I could send SMS, I could do voice. Some of those cost a little bit of money, of course. But I'm just going to hit okie dokie. And Now, when we get 404s, or at least an average of, what did I say, 4, it'll send me a notification. So that will basically go and create that, and then it should select it here.
Cool, but those things take a little bit of time to create, right?
Well, those things are pretty quick, but what does take a little bit longer is actually creating the rule itself. Yeah. So you know, let's say here, alert rule name is, 404. We are getting lots of 404s. This is a terrible name. Go work out what's happening, right? So this you know, you put whatever you like in here. Okay, the important thing here, I suppose, as well, is the severity, right? So the severity is basically saying, what's the severity of this alert? And it's just a number, right? Sev0 through to Sev4. But typically the way, and I think in the Microsoft guidelines, what it says is like 0 is critical, 1 is error, 2 is information, 2 is warning, 3 is information, 4 is verbose. So it's just like debug log levels. So for something like this, lots of 404s, it could be a problem with the site, like a bad link, or it could just be like, you know, random spam. So I'm just put this as informational. So Sev3, and then enable the rule upon completion. So with that, I can say create that alert rule. And that's where it's going to take a little bit of time. So it can take up to 10 minutes for those alerts to actually fire. And you know, remembering that they're actually aggregating over time as well, so it can take a little bit of time for them to come through. But it's created that rule, and we would start getting messages through soon. Okay, but where we actually see, you know, that we set up the alert, in order to view them, you know, as you can see here, because I already have these set up, I can see these. So for example, I set up an alert earlier on, which was around 404s. So this is not the one I just did. I actually set this up so as we had some data. And if we go and click on one of these, you can see that it'll tell you when the alert fired, what was happening there, what the severity is, what the affected resource is. So all good information there, including the criteria for it as well. So it was basically saying, if I'm getting a total greater than 3, you know, that's what triggered it. What was the actual value that happened when that fired? So pretty good information in here that you can go and have a look at. And you can also do things like, you can actually come and select one of these, and you can basically change its state. So I could say, okay, well, look, if I wanted to, I could say, you know what? You know, I can say I'm going to acknowledge this, and I could say, hey, I'm looking into this, right? And just let people know that I've updated the state of that. So that's kind of where we have a look at those alerts.
Awesome. Right. Thanks, Kit. Well, I think we've probably talked about monitoring alerts for the real estate application as much as we will for this section. But I want to point out, it's really just scratching the surface of what's possible through the Azure monitoring system. But it's hopefully enough that people can go in and start using it and start creating alerts and then seeing the things that they can do there.
Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic. Why don't we, I think, you know, where we are at the moment, we've had a look at the basics of monitoring and alerting here, like you say. Why don't we have a look and see if there's any questions we'll cover off, and then we'll talk a little bit about scaling, shall we?
Cool. Yeah, there's lots of very strong, deep questions that are coming through as well. So yeah, David had a question. I've had some challenges setting up alerts. For example, I set up an alert for more than 2 exceptions in 15 minutes of my app. I don't get anything in some cases, but in others it seems to work fine, except the alerts seem to be more related to Azure services, not up and running. I can't figure out why it works in some cases and not in others. What do you say to that, Kim?
Sorry, I'm just actually trying to find that one there.
Oh, okay. Well, Matthew's provided a link to some alerts troubleshooting that might help as well, and a follow-up email in the event that that doesn't work.
Okay.
Yeah, there might be some configuration issues surrounding that. I tend to like the troubleshooting documentation from us. I normally find it resolves like 95% of them, and then the other 5% is normally my fault. But yeah, that 5% is probably bigger than 5%.
Ken has a question. Is there a way to simulate a problem to test the alerts without writing code for it? So high CPU and things like that.
Well, you could. Oh, sorry, Kim. You go.
I was going to say, actually, if we Google this a little bit, Azure load testing, right? So there used to be a service, I think, in Azure for load testing, but that one has gone away. But it does this link here, and I'll actually bonk this into the chat window because it could be useful for Glenn and others. Sorry, not Glenn, Ken and others. It could be useful for you too. But it actually has some information about load testing with Visual Studio, how you set that up. Azure DevOps is a pretty popular option as well, but it also has information about other ways of load testing as well. And so you can basically say, tell it to, you know, put through a certain number of messages during a period of time, and you know, you could simulate errors there as well. So I'm not aware of a way of like mocking out things like CPU load other than actually putting it under the load.
Yeah, that's a tricky beast there as well. I'd be just doing experiments with that on the low tiers, because yeah, there's a lot of information going through. The reason we were demonstrating the 404s is 404s are really easy to simulate and present to everyone, so you can get an understanding of how the alerts work.
Yeah.
And then apply that to the other things that you want to monitor as well. So the process of monitoring is the same whether it's a 404 or whether it's an average CPU.
Yeah. I just generated a 404 right then.
Cool.
Okay.
So as a question, is there a limit number of emails SMS per day? Rob's answered that. Yeah, I don't think there's a limit either.
I don't believe there is a limit. Yeah.
Yeah, or if there is, it's beyond what you would practically need. Yeah. I have a common action that I'd like to share across subscriptions. Is it considered best practice to have that within an action group within each subscription, or reference a common action group in a single sub?
Yeah, so I suppose the question here is, if we come back to alerts, when we have when we were creating that rule, there's this idea of action groups, right? And so you could have, I've got two action groups inside of here. So I can set up those action groups, and then, you know, I could apply them to different resources and different alerts. So that's sort of why they've been structured that way. And look, I think if you've got the same, same set of actions that you want to perform on there, it kind of makes sense to do it and create one of those and reuse them. But the question is, within each sub or reference a common action group? Yeah, so I would set up a common action group, and I don't think you're going to be able to add one from a different sub. Oh, maybe you can. I've not done.
And you might also want to consider looking at Logic Apps or Azure Functions as a place to have some centralized processing too, that you can call out to that. We're just calling out to the pre-configured actions, but there's other opportunities there that you can use.
Yeah, fantastic. Cool. Okay, any other questions in there before we continue going?
Just a couple. Anonymous says, could you speak to how escalations can be implemented in alerting? Like, for example, email is dispatched after 10 minutes, SMS is sent to a supervisor. Yeah, I think that's probably some behavioral aspects you want to add in. I mean, in my point of view, behavior is best modeled in code. So that's how I would take it.
Yeah. So I think, I'm not sure how you could actually set that up so that, you know, if nothing had happened, you could do it. But, you can set up different actions here. So you could have different action groups tied to different alerts, you know, and you could say, have an alert that triggers every 5 minutes, one that triggers every 10 minutes. Maybe you could put something through there, but I'm not sure of a pipeline other than perhaps like Logic Apps that would allow you to configure that.
Yeah, because I think what Anonymous is really saying is like the first alert, let's do something. If it's not actioned within 10 minutes, then SMS and escalate it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a fair call. But yeah, I would tend to think that would be a little bit of behavioral code. For me, I would write a function that just takes that notification and then analyzes if that notification comes again within a time frame and then take another action. But
yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, that would be it. I think we've probably got time for one more. Narsi has a question. SOAP services are running in a Linux box, uses dedicated port for each service. Is there any way we can monitor the network traffic and alert? You can monitor the network traffic. Network watch is probably a good answer there. So I'd probably follow on with Rob's suggestion there, Narsi.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. And Sudeep, I think, has one of some examples of one of what you could do with functions and logic apps. Well, pretty much anything you want, right?
Yeah, functions is, in my view, it's just code. It's just an independent block of code that you execute. So you can do whatever you need to in that. And it's fairly flexible.
Super flexible.
Logic apps are similar. That logic apps are more workflow orientated, where you snap connectors together to execute actions, whether it's things like sending an email, making a tweet. It's a good idea to look at logic apps and see what connectors are there that might fit into what you're doing, because there's a huge amount of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Beautiful. All right, Glenn, let's have a look. Let's move on to our last objective, shall we? Let's get through that and we'll get some more questions. Please keep the questions coming. Really, really good questions through there. Okay, so let's say our last objective, we're going to talk about scaling our applications, right? So, you know, we talked about how we can monitor things, how we can detect when things are happening. What we're going to talk about here is the two main scaling approaches. We'll define what scaling is, and then we'll have a look. You know, once we've discussed that, we'll have a look at a couple of different ways you can control scaling as well. We'll talk about manual scaling. We'll talk about dynamic scaling as well. Now, I suppose first of all, what do we mean by scaling? I think scaling is kind of just the process of allocating resources to meet your performance requirements, you know, either high requirements or low requirements. And one of the big benefits of the cloud that we talked about is elasticity, which means that you can go and very easily dynamic adjust resources to maintain your performance levels. And that might be, you know, provisioning additional things when the peak is high, or it could be deallocating things as well when, you know, your demand reduces. And that's sort of allocating and releasing of resources. Kind of what I think about when I think about scaling. So Glenn, there's a couple of different approaches that we can use for scaling though, that people might have heard of. So tell me a little bit more about the approaches to scaling.
Yeah, there's really two ways an application will tend to scale. There's vertical scaling, also known as scaling up or scaling down. And that basically means changing the capacity of a resource. So for example, you could move your application service plan to a higher tier, which gives it more CPU and more memory. So a scale-up operation in an Azure website, it's kind of the equivalent of just putting in a new CPU and more memory into your on-premises server. So scale-up operations are really useful to consider when your site's hitting a limit or a quota, and it signals that you're outgrowing your existing mode of operations and you need to do something. Now, in addition, scaling up can be done on virtually any site without worrying about the implications of multi-instance data consistency. And that's because you've just got the one machine typically that's handling that server if you need to scale out to other machines. We'll talk about scaling out in just a second. That's the second part. So the other form of scaling is horizontal scaling out. So that's the process of adding or removing instances of a resource. So when you're doing this, your application can continue running without interruptions as new resources get provisioned. So our app service plan, that's one resource. Scaling out would mean we'd make several copies of that and then would have a load balancer in front of that would distribute the requests from your customers to machines within that group of app service plan instances. So to benefit from scale out operations, your site has to be multi-instance safe. So for the Van Arsdale migration, that became multi-instance safe when we added in Azure storage, because up until that point, all the files were actually stored on the app service that was actually running on that machine. So having a centralized storage allowed us to mean that each of those app services that were running could then access a centralized point, which meant we could scale out the application.
Yeah, right. So just to be clear on that one, so scaling up is just beefing up your machine effectively, right?
Yeah.
And scaling out is more instances. And what you're talking about with having state in those machines or data consistency is when we started our Van Arsdale solution, images were stored on the app servers, right? So
yes,
you couldn't scale that out because it would break.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't have access to the images in our case, but yes. So
we centralized that, which means now we can scale out because the images aren't on that particular machine. So it's effectively not holding state on the machine. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, it doesn't matter which instance of the app server a request goes to. And that's the holy grail of being able to scale out.
Fantastic. All right. So cool. So we got a couple of different scaling options there. What do people think is the sort of preferred approach for scaling? You know, I suppose it's going to depend on solutions. Does anyone scale their applications? And if so, you know, do you scale out or up? So we'll just pop that question out there, just see if that drives some ideas and some thoughts. But maybe in the meantime, Glenn, we should go and have a look at the portal and see where scaling is done. What do you think?
Cool, good idea.
Good idea. All right, so cool, let's have a look. Might sort of zoom in here a little bit. Okay, so at the moment, what I'm looking at in the portal is I'm looking at our app service. Okay, cool. And if I scroll down here a little bit, I'm gonna find under the settings section, I'm going to find two options. I'm going to find one called scale up, and I'm going to find one called scale out. And interestingly, you know, I'm looking at the app service here, and remember that, you know, an app service is kind of like your web application. So really what we're going to be doing is we want to be scaling the app service plan, right? Because that's like the machine that's hosting it. So even though I can see this in the app service, really you can see that it's affecting the app service plan. Okay, so let's have a look at scale up. Let's see how I go and click on scale up here. And what we're shown here is we're shown the different tiers. And we can see that at the moment we're on a free one. And we can actually go ahead and we can select different tiers. And, you know, we can see the different features that we have here. And it's really just a matter of applying it, right? And it's going to go and change what we do. So for example, we might want to change this to a production S1 machine. Okay, and then I can go ahead and I can hit apply, and it's going to do that actually pretty quickly, right? So let's have a look at how long it takes. And just for reference, Glenn, think about how long it would have taken you on premises to go and get a beefier machine.
I've done that painful journey of ordering new machines, waiting for it to come back, pulling apart things, backing up, restoring. It was a nuisance. This is a delight compared to that.
Yeah, and so there we're done, right? We're on our S1 now. You know, if I come and have a look at my overview, and we have a look here, we're now on our S1 plan. Beautiful. One thing to be aware of, I suppose, is that, you know, when we're switching when we're scaling up like that and we're switching to a different app plan, there could be, you know, it happens pretty seamlessly, but internally some things might happen, right? Depending on your solution, if you're reliant on particular IP addresses or something like that, you know, it might change IP address, for example, but mostly it's pretty smooth, right? It's just sort of magically works, and our app service now, I was generating a fail, is going to be up, and it's going to be under S1. It's going to perform a little bit better. And the cool thing is, you know, if I decide that I don't want it to be on an S1 anymore, okay, and I sort of take it back down to a free one, I can just go and apply that, and that's just going to pull it back down to a free. So that's really cool for, you know, when your traffic slows down, you're going to spend less money, for example. Okay, so that's scaling up. You know, it's really, really nice. But what about scaling out?
Well, scaling out, Kim, I think it's potentially a better scaling option because we never have to wait for the application to move to a new app service plan. Instead, we just keep on adding or removing instances of an existing app service. Again, we just access the options from the scale out settings. I think before we do that though, you might need to go back to the scale up because it'll only operate on an S1 and above, remember.
Good point. So I went to scale out and it said, hey, auto scale isn't available, right? And the reason auto scale isn't available is because, I switched it back to the free tier. Good point. So I'll throw it back to an S1 for you.
Okay.
And again, you know, pretty nice, pretty quick.
Cool. And it won't take too long to do this, and then we'll be able to see those details against the app service plan.
I think we're good. Beautiful.
Yeah. And so you can see the two options there, the manual scale and custom auto scale. So let's first talk about the manual scale. And it really can't be simpler. You have a slider down the bottom, which has the instance count, and you drag that slider to specify how many instances that you want. So different plans, whether it's standard, basic, or premium, they're going to have a different maximum instance count. So with this plan, I can run all the way up to 10 instances during the busiest time periods. And if things back off, you know what? I can bring the instance count down. And again, no downtime.
Yeah.
And any existing client connections will continue to run to completion. So if I'm increasing the instance count, there's a new server being built, it'll hold a request or move a request to the other app instances while it's running, and when the new one's available, it will share the load between the other machines, which is really, or the other app services, which is really nice.
So that's quite important, right? Because you don't want, you know, if you change scale, you don't want half your connections to suddenly die. So it handles all that, you know, and this also does the load balancing as well automatically, right? So I remember back in the day having to set up load balancers. That was a disaster.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So why don't we set up some of the auto scale rules there, Kim?
So I suppose the thing, you know, this is cool, right? And you could sit here and you could change this value, but you don't want to be sitting here all day just sort of playing with this slider. So that's where we want to have a look at auto scaling, right? And it's essentially about, you know, providing some heuristics that are as you can in check. You know, have a look at your app service and then scale out and scale in based on metrics, for example. Okay, so Glenn, I've selected custom auto scale here. So what do I want to do? Let's go for an example.
Let's do the one that we've been talking about, which is what do we do when the CPU instance gets too high? So let's just add a rule that increases the instance count by one when the average CPU load is above 80%, for example. Okay. So when we're on a heavy load, let's add a new server and that should help the load.
All right. So I've selected auto scale. This is the default rule, right? So this is going to apply if nothing else overrides it. And you're saying we're going to scale based on a metric?
Yeah, that's right. And we want to add a rule there. I can see you're already on the button. You've done this before. Okay. All right. So I'm fine. So what the rule will do is it'll look, we want to have it the average CPU percentage, and that's going to be operating against the app service plan. And so it's a metric that comes from the app service plan and not the app service itself. And we'll do this against all the instances that are running. And thanks, Kim. And as you scroll down the bottom, you'll actually see that the CPU percentage is greater than, you'll have a greater than value. Set that to 70. That's fine. We can leave it at 70.
We can just type in anything like in here.
And we want to do that for a duration of, let's say, we've got 10 minutes there. Probably 5 minutes is probably okay.
Okay, so we're saying if the CPU is greater than 70% for 5 minutes.
We want to perform a particular action. And in this case, we want to increase the instance count by a value of one.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to have a cool down time period. So we don't want to check that condition again for 5 minutes.
Okay. So this is that's effectively just to stop it like flip flopping, right?
Oh yeah. Cause if you kept on checking it while the new instance is loading up, you're still under heavy load and you just continuously get new instances. So it's really a mitigation approach to make sure you're taking the right action making sure it's confirmed that it's doing the right thing. That's what we're really trying to do.
Beautiful.
And this is really just a way of adding more power into the mix. And it's just sort of sitting back and analyzing the system to see that things have stabilized. So I think that rule is pretty good in what we're after. So we'll click on the add there.
Yep, done that.
And link that in. So what's next?
So actually there's a couple of settings down here, Glenn, that are kind of important, because if I've got this scaling rule, which is saying, hey, let's go and increase it by one if your CPU is greater than 70%, which is what we have here. It could theoretically just keep scaling up and up and up and up and up and effectively never stop, I suppose. So there is these instance limits as well. So that puts some bounds on it. So we could say, look, okay, I get that you're going to scale up on high CPU, but never go above 4, for example. And you could also set a minimum as well to say, you know, if things back off, only go back to say 2 if you wanted to, or whatever value you had there. But actually that brings up an interesting question, Glenn. We've got a scale out rule, which means we've got a rule which says if our CPU is greater than 70, you know, increase the number of instances by 1, but what happens when load drops?
Yeah, that's true. Well, you do a similar thing in the reverse order. So you might have another rule that when the average CPU is below 20%, that you reduce the instance count by 1.
Yeah, right. And so I think that's best practice, right? If you've got a scale out, have a scale in rule.
Yeah, that's right. And that way you can manage the resources as much as you can. And you're not paying for resources you don't need either.
Yeah. So let's add one of those in. Let's add another rule here. And we'll say, okay, well, let's say our CPU. So again, you know, we can have a look at, you know, the average. And in this case, we're saying, let's have a look at app service plan metrics. And so there's a bunch of different things that we have in here that you could respond to. We're going to respond to CPU. And we're going to say, okay, well, if that goes, should we say, I don't know, what's a good value? We had 70, so let's say less than 30, maybe.
Yeah, that'll be fine.
So less than 30%. We had a duration of 5 minutes. Again, it's totally up to you. So we'll just leave it as 5. And now what we want to do is we want to say, okay, well, if we drop below 30, let's decrease the count. And what's cool is you can do it by percentages, you can do it by specific numbers as well. But we'll say decrease it by 1. And again, we've got this cool down period of 5 minutes. That's pretty cool. So add that one in. And so now what we have is we've got a scale out and a scale in rule inside of here. So scale out when we get a high CPU, scale in when we get low CPU. Fantastic. All right. Were there any other options, Glenn?
There is. That's actually really good. So one of the other options you can have is essentially to auto scale to a specific instance count. Mm-hmm. So by selecting add a scale condition, you can see that link down the bottom. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then setting what instance count you'd like for a specific date period. So for example, I've got a website that I run for a local community nonprofit here in Brisbane, Australia. And for 3 months, that's their peak time. So for them, like from the start of June to the end of August, they have more instances needed. But for the rest of the year, they can keep it pretty light. So my instance count for them is 1, but over those 3 month period, I'll have an instance of 3 servers running in order to make it handle all the load. So that's a situation where I know I have the time. So I can set the instance count to something like 3, set the start dates to where I want them, likewise for the end date.
Sure, and we can just specify some April 1st. Why not?
That's right. Or you might have something like, you might have an app that is under heavy load on the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see the repeat specific days option there, Kim. You could select that.
Yep.
And you could say, you know what? My app is really popular on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So for those, let's have the instance count set to 5 for those time periods.
Yeah, okay. Fantastic.
And so you can say... Yeah. And that way you can manage the scalability. And you can see there's a start time and end time. So maybe you've got something that you only need scalability during weekdays between office hours. Like there's there's lots of options you can use there.
Yeah, that's gives you a lot of power over what you can do, for sure. All right, and the other thing that's probably worth mentioning here as well is that you can set up multiple of these scaling rules, right? You might have noticed that this is the default rule. The first one is the default rule. And it says here, this scale condition is executed when none of the other scaling conditions match, right? So you could set this up for your CPU scaling, and it will basically come back through the scale operations and it will say, if none of them match, then, do that. Otherwise, it would say on a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, increase it to 5. So if it's not that time, it would still handle the CPU. So you can combine them together, which is really, really cool. Yeah, fantastic. All right. Now let's have a quick look, Glenn, see if there's any questions we want to tackle in the chat window.
Yeah, before we do that, Kim, I just want to make a critical point. You can set those rules up like we've done. It's really critical to hit that save button in the top left of the toolbar. So both Kim and I have suffered a lot when we forget to hit that save button. So I encourage you all to do that as well.
Absolutely.
Not to suffer, but to hit the save button.
We don't want people to suffer.
No, not at all.
Beautiful. But we hit that save button and we'll actually just go in and set that up for us. Okay.
Cool. So there's a few questions and comments. Kavilan, we use an app service with auto scaling out policy. Awesome. I would like that comment as well. Anonymous has scale out doesn't cause outage. No, it doesn't. It just puts the request to the other instances while the other machine's being created or set up. And when that new app service instance is running, well, requests will get routed to that then. And likewise, when it's taken offline, it's very smart in that way.
Yep. So scaling up is more likely to create a very small outage, but scaling up, it provisions that, puts it in the load balancer, redirects resources. Beautiful.
Cool. So Keith in Charlottesville, VA, you know what? That's my team as well. I love the. Anyway, moving on. Why are the USD prices displayed on your screen way cheaper than what I see in my subscription? Well, it's often region-based as well. You might find that different regions will have different prices. And depending on the configuration of the app services as well, there's a lot of factors there at play. I highly encourage everyone to be familiar with the Azure Cost Calculator, just so you can get a idea of what you'd be paying for with the configuration that you want. Kim, do you want to take some questions?
So can scale out support session stickiness? So this is sort of like having state that you're maintaining a particular server. Matt's answered this one. He says, generally, session stickiness is kind of a bad practice. It's kind of against the whole idea of scaling, I suppose, or elasticity, I suppose. Definitely recommend against it. And I see that Matt has posted a link to the design principles about scaling out.
Yeah.
Cool. Akila says, is a rule similar to an alert? So in terms of rules, what do you think? Were we talking about scaling rules? I'm not sure. Maybe Akila, you can clarify a little bit more about what you mean there.
I think there's similar concepts.
Similar concepts, right? You look at a metric, you respond to a metric with a particular action.
I think the metric is the key thing there. We're both the alerts and the rules are both using metrics to kind of choose which path they take. But I would say that they're cousins, but not directly similar.
Anonymous asks, is there any downtime associated with auto scaling? Not with scaling out. Like I said, you probably with scale up, it is moving to a different app service plan. So it's tried to be minimized, but it's not guaranteed to be zero.
Yeah. If the app service hosts a web service, the client will open the connection to the web service and call functions. Is there a way to get the count of concurrent connections to the web service? I think there's some metrics for that.
I think you'll find if you were to even go and have a look at the, I'm just going to have a quick look while we're chatting here. I think if you go and have a look at the metrics, we could probably find for an app service, there is a connections, right? And you could actually go and have a look at the number of connections that are coming through. So you can see that we have some connections. And you can also do things like you can put this against particular instances of it as well. So we can split those values and we can filter those values. So absolutely.
Cool. Some more questions. I like this one. It feels like Chad's had this issue where he's thought about it. If you have conflicting scale rules, which one wins? So a specific scale says 3, auto scale says decrease by 1, bringing you below 3. Well, I think that's why you set the minimums on that one, Chad. But yeah, there's normally an order of operation for the rules as well. So yeah, it's...
Yeah, I'd
probably
say,
best to avoid an inequality in your rules.
Yeah, I'd say you don't make it too complex.
Yeah. Kim, do you want to take a few more?
Let's have a look. Can we scale out in geographical distributed area, e.g. adding new instances in West Coast region rather than East Coast? That is a good question, which I do not know the answer to.
Well, I think it depends on what you're trying to do. So if you're talking about scalability and if you need to scale out to different regions, defines how you work it. Like if you've got issues like that, I would be looking at potentially different architectures. I'm using CDNs to host content and having a globally distributed database like Cosmos DB would be a better option. Yeah, some of the more complicated ones require a little bit of architectural thought around that process. But in the case of our app, you could potentially add new instances in there. I think some of the other Azure services, like Frontdoor, could potentially route things like that. But yeah, check out some of the other app hosting options.
I would have a look at these options. Yeah, Glenn, there is a dimension, there's an instance, and you can actually specify particular instances to have a look at. And you may be able to, I have never tried it, is the thing. You may be able to, I'm not sure, you'd have to read the docs, but you might be able to say, hey, when I scale out that particular instance, for example. So have a look at that docs.
Cool. William, asked, is it possible to add rules for the scale up? Well, I think it's the scale out that has the rules. There's no auto scale on the scale up, is there?
I don't believe so, no.
Yeah, I think you'd probably have to code that, like investigate what your CPU levels are on the machine and then execute a scale up operation in some way. You could probably code that using some of the Azure APIs or even something like PowerShell or Bash.
Yeah, fantastic. All right, well, let's round this up because we've only got a few minutes left, right? So let's talk about scaling and monitoring, and like they're really, really comprehensive topics. We've just sort of focused on kind of the aspect that mattered most just to keep our Van Arsdale website running. We had a look at built-in monitoring allows us to have a look at various metrics about our resources. We saw that you can configure alerts really, really easy. So hopefully what we can do is we can catch errors before our users do. And we also saw that we can scale as well. So we can adjust the power as we need to. We can either scale up or probably in our situation, we would scale out. So for Van Arsdale or somebody moving to the cloud, that gives them a certain level of comfort that, when they start seeing those different spikes in performance, they can respond to it. Or if they're getting errors, they can actually get notified by alerts as well. So that's really cool. Now, Glenn, I think it's also fair to say that, again, this is a very, very comprehensive topic. So there's a couple of Learn modules, and we'll share some other links with you in a moment. But these two Learn modules here are actually very, very good to have a look at for discussion of scaling as well over at the Learn site. All right. So Glenn, I think we've come to the end of today's session. And we've, over the last 5 sessions, we've done a lot of things. Why don't we do a little bit of a recap of where we've been, and then we'll provide some people with some links as well. Why don't you take us?
Yeah, sure. So first off, we started by really trying to work with VanArzle and move their on-premises environment up to the cloud. And they had a strong desire to move to the cloud just because a lot of the requirements they had around security, scalability, and other factors. So in our first session, we explored the options for hosting web applications in the cloud, and we introduced app services and app service plans, and we selected the right hosting solution for VanArzle in the cloud based on their requirements. Mm-hmm. And in our second session, we moved our on-premises database from Microsoft SQL Server into the cloud using Azure SQL Server, migrated the data using the Data Migration Assistant, and had our application and our database in the cloud at that point. Our third session had a set up continuous integration with GitHub. So when we check in changes to the code base, it's automatically deployed. I love that word, automatically. It says right. So many great things. Great word. And our fourth and penultimate session had us looking at cloud-based storage using Azure Storage, and in particular, the blob-based storage mechanism of Azure Storage. So we did this in preparation for today's session where we scaled out. We couldn't do that scale-out operation until we had some centralized storage, which was really nice. And then finally, in today's session, we looked at monitoring our Azure services, setting up alerts, and to be notified of critical issues, and also scaling our application to manage our websites, to manage the growth that VanArzle expects. So I think overall, we've been pretty successful in that migration. That's a confetti moment there, Kim, obviously.
I was already on the button, Glenn.
You are cool. So I think VanArzle are in a good position to leverage all the things that they need at this particular point in time. So I think we've probably really reached the end of our series, and it's nearly time to sign off. But Kim, thanks for being a gracious co-host with me. I've enjoyed the whole experience with you, and thanks for everyone for showing up. Thanks for Rob and Matt for moderating through this series too. But Kim, do you have any final thoughts?
I do. I say go out and experiment, and most importantly, go and have a look at some of the materials at the Learn site. This is a terrible slide. It's got the links to a bunch of Learn modules that you've collected, Glenn. These are actually yours here. So the address is akams. I'm actually going to type this into the chat window. aka.ms/learn-live/session. And then the session number / links. All right. So like I said, terrible there. But have a look at that. All else failing, go and have a look at a GitHub repo, at AKMS VanArzle repo. That is actually going to have all the links in there as well. So check that out. We love it if you can tell us what you thought of the series. You know, we want to get better at this stuff. We want to attack the topics that are of most interest to you. So please do spend a little bit of time, give us some feedback over at that link, and I think Matt and Rob will probably put those links out. If you've got further questions, you know, and you want to reach out to particularly Matt's team, msusdev@microsoft.com is a great way to go. So that's kind of what I wanted to leave people with, a bunch of links and a bunch of learnings that they can go and do. So with that, Glenn, I think we're done. Ganesh says applause. I want to thank everyone who's attended as well. So please go out and explore. All right. So thanks, Ken. Says fantastic work, and Akila as well. Appreciate it very much. All right, Glenn. Well, I think we should put on some music and we should sign off. And feel free to reach out to us if there's any other questions. But for now, thank you.